All right, we've got Nate Rogers with us today. Nate is with Badger State Maintenance, a company that he founded based out of Wisconsin. I actually went to high school with Nate, and I'm super excited to have him on today. Nate, why don't you just give a quick background, what you've done and what you've built at Badger State Maintenance and what services you provide?
Yeah, so Badger State Maintenance began in 2008, essentially, the same year graduated high school. And it started out as a part-time gig as I went to down to Blackhawk Tech pursuing my degree in fire science. But
how'd the degree go?
Well, we never finished. So 5 months, 5 months into this new this landscape business, really just started taking off. And by the end of the first summer, I think I recruited two other guys from high school to come help me.
Is Nelson one of those guys?
Yeah, Chris Nelson is one of them. And Kevin McNutt was the other one. Mm-hmm. Two guys come help me get some work done. I did the full year at first year at Blackhawk Tech, and second year I had so much work lined up that it's like this isn't going to work, and we just took off. So that was 16 years ago.
That's crazy. It's already 16 years.
16 years ago, and here we are, 2024. We've got 25 guys in the field, off a staff of about six, and we specialize in high end. I don't like to call it high end, high touch residential. So,
what's high touch residential?
High end residential, high touch. Both are, sites that we're on every single week doing maintenance at. So,
gotcha.
Gardening, lawn mowing, snow plowing, the whole exterior of their house we take care of essentially. As well as we're really heavy into commercial landscaping, so commercial design, commercial build.
Got it. So high touch meaning you try to provide everything for that person, customer.
Anything from irrigation system to trimming shrubs, bushes,
hardscapes, outdoor kitchens.
All of it. We're just
some of the pictures are pretty sweet. We'll have to maybe track down some of the pictures and throw them in here.
Yeah, diving into that luxury outdoor living has really been good for us the last 5-6 years.
I remember when you started, because we were still in high school, right?
Yeah. Yep.
It was the spring of our senior year you started.
Correct.
I feel like, I don't remember if I like made this story up, but I tell other people when I talk about you to other people, because sometimes I bring you up, just cause like your success journey and whatnot. It's awesome. And, people used to kind of make fun of you, like, Nate, good luck mowing lawns the rest of your life or something like that. Yeah, right. I remember that.
Even had, we won't say any names, some teachers back in the day that, kind of had that mentality, but, really where I got started is I helped one of my mentors, Bob Johnson. So mm-hmm. he was the dean of students at the high school, and he asked if anyone wanted to help out at an auction. My senior year, I said, I'll give you a hand. So we show up at this auction and I see a skid loader, I see, some landscape equipment, knowing that, hey, that might be something I want to try. The end of the auction, he goes, what is this bidder here that's got $50,000 in equipment that he purchased? And I'm like, well, that's me. And by the way, can I borrow $50,000?
I didn't know that story.
So awesome. I think I only had $1,500 in my bank account at the time. So he kind of floated me.
So was that was the spring? And that was the spring of 08? Or was that
spring
fall?
Spring of 08.
Fall of 07? Okay, spring of 08.
Spring of 08. And then went to the dealership. He introduced me to the dealership and got a truck and kind of off to the races there.
Sweet. I do remember coming back one of those summers, and I remember coming down here at that point. I'm sure, I don't know if you were still living at home or where you were living. Must have been within 2 years of you starting.
Yeah.
And I remember, obviously, I'd heard the business was growing and stuff, and I remember we had something at your house where you had like your parents' driveway was lined with like mulch and like dirt and like you had all these
dump
jobs.
Trucks.
Yeah, dump trucks like your parents, just the house you grew up in.
I got thrown out of the house I think year three that they're like, listen, this isn't going to work. You need to figure out a space.
It's got 50 yards of stone here and which really, yards of dirt there. And I'm like, holy shit, he's got a lot going on here.
Yeah, and that skyrocketed us into like the our first, my parents saying, hey, no more, crap at the house. Yeah. And really dove into like my first real estate deal.
Yeah.
And
you're like me too, where you have really supportive parents, obviously, which helps, a lot. I mean, they're willing to support, but that was I can see how they drew the line with driving down the driveway and just got all this stuff everywhere. Yeah, exactly. What was the biggest obstacle getting started with your business?
Biggest I think the biggest obstacle was like the learning curve, right? So there's no, I mean, you can do a 4-year degree in landscape architecture or one of those paths, but I didn't. So it was like literally learning on the go. So yeah. I know the first, one of the first big projects we did was that first summer of 08. And I think it was a $40,000 landscape install that if I look back at it now, I'm like, that should have been about $150,000 landscape install.
Underbid it a little bit.
And but we learned and we spent the whole summer there, like from how to plant a tree to how to build a retaining wall to like how to build a patio.
Yeah.
So a lot of like just learn on the go and learn from some mistakes and some costly mistakes too.
What do you think? So this is something I always find intriguing is there's a lot of people that they don't take any action because they think they need to know like 90% or 100% of the information or before they can like start something.
Yeah.
How much? So like, it sounds like in that first project, you didn't really know much at all. And you learned a lot on that first project that you went.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how much do you think you actually knew about what you were doing before you really started?
Was like, I don't want to say zero because everyone knows like they can figure out getting out a lawnmower and mowing a lawn. But aside from that, there was like, it was all just learn on the go. Yeah. And it was just reaching out to the nursery and being like, hey, here's the plant order. Can you help me? And even having the landscape supply yard, you know, come and really kind of all pull together to figure it out.
And then how you probably take care of that tree for the first whatever and like sure. all that stuff, right? Because there's stuff that goes on after.
And one of the big things, one of the big costly mistakes early in my career is built a retaining wall up in Madison. It was actually for my cousin. He asked, hey, can you build this retaining wall? It's 12 feet tall, 100 feet long. So, you know, $70,000-$80,000 retaining wall, structural. And I didn't really know what I was doing. So we built the wall, thinking that like a geo grid that really gives it the strength to hold that wall together. I'm like, hey, we could use snow fence probably to make that work. And later that year, that wall fell over. So yeah,
at least no one got hurt.
Yeah. No one got hurt. That wall fell over, but, you know, so you just learn, grab an engineer, go rebuild it. And I think that put me another 50,000 in the hole. But when I came out of it, it was like, I'm the retaining wall expert now.
Right.
Like,
right. I know what I'm won't doing. Make that mistake again. And yeah, that's a big wall too. 12 sure. feet high, you said?
Yeah. 12 feet, 100 feet long.
Yeah.
20 feet from the back of their house. Like maybe compromise the house if we don't get this fixed right. in the next few weeks.
Yeah. So, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all good learning stuff. I mean, you know, but like, so you obviously didn't go to college. People are telling you, oh, good luck, have fun mowing lawns rest of your life, Nate, whatever. But really, like, you talk about some of those mistakes. You know, the cool thing about those mistakes is, you know, yeah, they cost about a college tuition, mm-hmm. but you've also got cash flow from your business coming in to cover that, right?
Yeah.
And you've learned something massive that now you can probably go and, you know, duplicate those jobs again and again and again, but do them correctly and have a decent sized profit margin on it. So that your return on that type of investment of the way you learned, maybe hurt a little bit more than some other people, you know, when you're actually going through it, but in the long run, probably makes a lot of sense.
For sure. It definitely hurt. And even look at it like back when I was, you know, this was when I was 18, 19 years old. And it's like, what's the worst could happen? Well, like I could file bankruptcy, like literally like that's what I'm looking at, but that's only 7 years. You can restart, like, let's go for it. So, right. I think that was, just dove in.
Yeah. I like how you said, other than getting on a lawnmower, I didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. Because that's like always my mindset is there's so many things that I've done doing what I'm doing where I have no clue. I have no clue at all. But I'm like, I'm just going to commit to this. I'm going to figure out along the way. And I just got to feel it's going to be worth it.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of times I make, and I'm so fast at making decisions. There's a lot of times that I probably know 30 to 50% of the information or, you know, before I make a decision to go. And so I just think every time we have someone on that's done something special or successful, I always try to ask that question because it's just interesting to hear how consistently it's like, I knew nothing or very, very little that I know. I just jumped in, had faith, and I worked really hard.
And just recruit some good people. I did recruit a couple guys that knew what they were doing after my first mistake and really learned from
like the labor end of like how to take like how to actually do this project.
Yeah, or a guy
like,
that was you know working, you know, Hispanic guy that had been working building retaining walls for 20 years. I'm like, what is it going to cost for you to come over and work for Badger State? And he gave me a number. Then like, I know I can't afford that, but we're going to figure it out, and you're the expert, so let's go.
Yep. Yeah. 100%. I mean, that's similar to what I did when I've hired the people I've hired around me, where it's like, you know, you hear what a talented person or someone that you need on your team, what that's going to, you know, cost you, but it's really ends up being an investment because of, you know, leaning on that IP or, you know, the intellect that they have, the experience that they have to be able to do the best job possible. And you obviously your company grows and sees huge benefits. What was there ever a time that you wanted to quit?
I don't know. I don't think I have any quit in me. Like that was, there was times that I'm like low of the low, like had no money, like broke. Literally, I'll take you back to like the bottom was, it was, I think it was January, my second year in business.
Which is January 2010, which is coming out of the Great Recession, by the way, is too, right? It's like, I think a lot of people too watching this don't, like they forget about that part of it too, of when you say you started your business in the spring of 08. I mean, that was a tough 4-year period coming out of there, especially the first 2 years. And that's where you just said your lowest point is. I didn't want to cut you off. Keep going.
But I really didn't really know any better. I mean, I was 18 years old in 08. So it's like, I didn't know what good times were. I didn't know what, you know, bad times were. But anyway, it was, I believe, January of that second season. No money in the bank, credit cards maxed out, looking outside, no snow in the forecast. We do snow removal in the winter. And like, where are we going to go from here? Like, I, like literally looking at my phone, waiting for the bank to call and be like, you need to turn your stuff in. So, and that was when I, my girlfriend at the time, now wife, Danielle, she floated me $5,000. So
there you go.
So that's how we got through in the beginning.
$5,000 made it through.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to dig you out of that? Where it was like the next spring fruitful, or what was kind of the, after the $5,000, what'd you do?
I think we got like just catching these breaks. So we got a big snowstorm like the end of that month, and that, you know, that was a record snowstorm, I think February of 10. That really floated us into and was like, okay, now I've got enough money to buy that second skid loader that we've been talking about. So like just doubling down.
So let's go to zero again.
Yeah.
Is that basically what you did?
And then, hey, now I can control the weather. I'm not going to just, you know, I'm not going to set myself up to only have snow plowing income in the winter. All right. Now I know what to do. Like we got into spring and it's like, I'm just going to grind it out and make this thing work. So, it wasn't until year four until we started like seeing some returns and could actually year four or five to start actually, you know, pulling a draw.
Yeah. So 2012, 2013. So you were just paying yourself basically just the absolute minimum or well,
yeah, I would pay, so we got through like that real low time 2 years in, to where, you know, and I was working out trade deals too. Like, hey, I'll, you know, I think we did a trade on another piece of equipment or whatnot. I'll landscape your, well, it was Johnson Tractor. I'll landscape your new facility you're building. And by the way, let's trade a mini excavator for it. So kind of working that deal.
I didn't know that either. That's awesome.
Yeah, to kind of grab some
bartering,
grab
bit.
Some equipment. That's been a huge. Huge, it's been a part of our business the last
so anyone start
years.
A landscaping company, hardscape, mowing lawns, whatever, right? There's an idea right there.
Yeah,
get
your
first piece of equipment or your next piece of equipment that you need,
barter it.
Yeah,
so
you're coming out of there. Did you live at home for when you started that business? Were you, I mean, obviously, we're in high school, you're still living at home. Did you live at home?
Well,
I mean, I graduated college and I was fortunate enough and lucky enough to, I lived at home, I think, for 3 years after college was done, and it allowed me to save up, you know, more money. Cause I was like someone that was all in too, and I'm still all in. I mean, I still, my bank account goes to zero regularly.
Exactly.
But how'd you navigate some of that stuff? Cause I mean, I know that's a question a lot of, especially a lot of younger people ask, like, what am I supposed, like what, how am I supposed to pay for this? I'm like, figure it out, like get a roommate, or, you know, if you have the fortunate ability to live with your parents or an uncle or a grandparent, like do it for a year and a half, do it for 2 years. What was that like for you as you were building the business, your personal lifestyle, or, you know, and where you were living and what that kind of looked like?
Yeah. I was out of the house. Like, I think the day I graduated, I was out of the house.
Okay.
I had moved down to south side of Janesville, a farm, and a guy that I was, you know, helping do some landscape work, some farm work down there. He had a house that the deal was, hey, if you fix it up, you can live there.
Yep.
So it's like, that's exactly what I want to do.
Yep.
Closer to Blackhawk, like this will work out great.
Yep.
So that was the first, you know, out of the house, and had a spot to store some a little bit of stuff. down there some materials as I, but a lot of my work was in Milton. So that's where we're going back and forth. After I got that house fixed up, I went back, got that house fixed up. That kind of went south down there. So
like the relationship or with
the relationship. Yeah. Went back to my parents, and lived there as, then I was like, my mission was to buy a house. So that's when, I think 2010 was the, $8,000 tax credit. So, So I found a $100,000 house and, had a few bucks, and bought that first house.
That's right. It was up on a little hill or something, wasn't it?
Yep.
Along, yeah.
Yep. Right. Yep, up, right between that. Milton and Janesville. Yeah, so yep. nice little spot there. So.
What about as far as like lifestyle? Like, so this is the other thing too, is like, how much am I going to have to give up for success? And I think sometimes people are worried about that because, I mean, I tell people all the time, I can probably count on less than two full hands how many parties and stuff that I went to from 2012 to 2018. Because for me at that point in time, I know I was like a severe case of it, but like I had to be all in on what I was doing and I was that dedicated to what I was doing. So like, how many hours a week were you working and how much has that changed now, if it's changed at all, from when you were first building your business to kind of like in the middle to now being 16 years in?
Yeah, so I'm not one to sit around or party, but I feel like every single time I've taken that next leap, I've reinvested, the whatever profits we've had, I've reinvested to like thrown out on the line to where like you have to work. So I was working 60 to 75 hours back in 2008, 2009. Yep. And here we are 16 years later and I still work 60 to 75
steady,
hours.
Steady week. Eddie.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's been just a grind.
Yep. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah, and going back to like, there was no partying or any, it was maybe once, buddies were in town, we'd go over to Whitewater, go over to college over there and hang out for the night. But that was like maybe once or twice a year.
Yep.
The rest was a grind.
It's hard, especially when you're sharing the story before, like people know, they just heard what you said about, having your credit cards maxed, not having money in the bank. And like, you really don't have the option. Like all you are at that point when you're so all in your business, you're not thinking about, I was never thinking about anything else. And again, not that that's good or bad, because it, like, I sacrificed some really good relationships I had. And thankfully, like, Tom and Jay, a couple of my best friends that, I spend more time, I've seen them more probably in the last 2 years than I saw like in, 6 year time period. But, obviously the friends that you have that are true friends, they'll always be there too when they're kind of understanding of the story and whatnot. But I know that's always a question that people ask, is like, what'd you have to give up? Because a lot of people don't want to give it up.
Yeah. I think for, in my case, everything. You got to give up everything. You got to just go all in.
Yep.
And that's what I did.
Yep. So 100%. And I mean, and that's the thing too, is I've gotten more success. I mean, obviously I'm, your life's changed a lot. My life's changed a lot. I've been doing this stuff for about 12 years. You've been 16 years. You didn't go to college. And obviously I want to be successful financially with my business. I also want a, healthy lifestyle. I want to, with my family and all that stuff. But like what people don't realize too is there's going to be seasons where there's something that has to take the hit. And I think the big mistake though too is like, because you got two kids now too, right?
Yeah.
So like that's the thing too though is, to be able to find ways where you're still able to do what you do, but then still find time for your kids. How do you find now that you have kids that are what, four? Are they
six? My daughter Camila's three? Six and Cash is three.
Three.
Yeah.
So how do you find time to fit family in?
Yeah, it's still a struggle to this day. Work till last night, 8 o'clock. I'm still at the office. Camila, mom, bless her, she's, running the kids to gymnastics, or running Camila to gymnastics, and my 3-year-old boy, I'm sure he's just creating a total ruckus there at gymnastics. But I think it's just, it's like, find someone that's super supportive, which I have, and like just have her just like Danielle, she just rolls with me. She's like, I know you got to work. I know you got to do that. But then when it does come to family time or family day or family vacation time, like that's the best. It makes it that much more rewarding.
100%. Yeah. So. And you guys got like little farm and stuff. You've been teaching her how to hunt, right?
Yeah. We got a couple farms.
So you do that with your kids and.
Yep. And my daughter, Camila, she's getting into, you know, shooting a gun. We went out youth season this year. We didn't shoot anything, but like to see, you know, her evolve and get involved in this stuff, it's only going to get better as the years go on.
You're a pilot and fly your own plane, right?
Yeah, that was.
You still have a plane or no?
So I'll dive into that a little bit.
Anything that you don't want in here, we can cut out too.
We can dive into that a little bit. So purchased 2021. Put a purchase order in for a brand new Cessna 182 airplane, and
so that's propeller prop
plane, single engine, piston driven, four seater plane, cruises like 180 knots. So enough to get out to Denver and back, or get out to Denver on one without stopping.
How long would that flight be?
Five hours. Yeah. So took delivery of it. I mean, 15-month lead time on a new plane purchase. So took delivery of it as I was reinvesting in my business. Yep. So went from take delivery of the plane, year and a half I owned it, and put 30 hours on it. So, you know, my operational cost was in the, you know, for us running at about the same pace as a small jet and per hour.
Per hour. Because no matter what, you're going to have a fixed cost.
Yeah, your fixed cost. You
divide that by how many hours you're actually using it, and 30 hours doesn't give you a very.
You know, it was $5,000 an hour is what it cost. And so I actually just recently put it on the market, and within 2 days I sold it and sold it for profit. So all right, this is good. This is good. But now I'm looking at a 206, which is the next step bigger, 18-month lead time again. And it's like, all right, in 18 months, I think we'll be set to actually put some time into flying. And,
or just have it be $7,000 an hour.
Yeah, it could be that too. So
I do. I look up jets and stuff all the time. And I'm like, so I'm starting to learn about them too. And I'm glad you did that first, because that makes me just want to keep chartering for a little longer.
Seriously.
But for you, like, you take it to the farms, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
Well, so it's easier for you to get to the farm.
Yeah. I just recently did one of my first 1031s and purchased a farm in southern Iowa, big whitetail hunting guy, and it's a big area for killing big deer. And so I used that plane to go down to my Iowa property. So recently sold that for a property up in La Crosse. That's what I would do, is bop around to job sites and hunting land.
Oh, I didn't know you use it for job sites, but I guess that makes sense, because you do have some like apartment owners and stuff that you work across the state for, even the Midwest. So you, do you have at your properties, do you have like a grass runway, or are you landing somewhere else and then driving to
local airport? Local airport. Keep the Polaris Ranger in the hangar.
It's probably a stupid question. I don't know enough about Cessnas, so I'm like,
you can land it on grass.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Cool.
Yep. The 206 is a little about. You could still put it down on grass, but
Is that a four seater?
The 206 is a six.
Six.
Yep. So one step up.
A little more. Still a single prop, or is that a double?
Still
then?
Single.
Single.
Yep. Yep. Then you get to the dual engine, and then,
How long did it take you to get your pilot license?
10 months, 12 months to get private pilot. And that was one of the most challenging things that I've done too, is really just to buckle down and to figure out how to navigate that whole space while I'm trying to build continue to grow my business.
For sure. So you're rated up to a certain, like, you're not going to be able to go fly a Gulfstream tomorrow.
No.
But you're rated up to like what, how big of a plane?
Just private pilot. So just single engine, private pilot. You can go to get your multi-engine, your instrument, you know, all the way up to your jet ratings and stuff like that. Just different levels.
So it's all prop stuff that you'd be staying in, or
does
it
matter? Yep.
Okay. I don't know how that works. So
all small single engine stuff.
Okay. So. Gotcha. Cool. So then, does anyone manage that plane for you or anything?
No. So you want to learn about rules, regulations. FAA is one that, like, you want a crash course. It's hey, your plane's going to deliver next week on Tuesday, and you need all this stuff set up. Knowing that I had 18 months to get to this,
procrastinated
on it, and there's a whole another end up hiring a. hire an aviation attorney to really navigate through all of those.
Interesting, yeah.
You know, the tax aspect of it to the, you know, regulatory, where, like, you know, where you purchase it, where you take delivery of it, where you, the whole works. It was a very good learning experience, knowing that going into this again, definitely going to hire that a third party to manage all of
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Gotcha. It's all interesting stuff,
yeah,
man.
It's
the plane world. Do you, is the 206 where you think you'll end up, or is there like another one that you want beyond that someday?
No, I don't think we end up at the 206, because you're still only flying 4 hours, you know. You can get into a, you know, dual engine, nice dual engine, you know, and that, you know, I don't think ever get into the jet game. I think that's a game for chartering, at least at my my level. But that dual engine really intrigues me to get down to, you know, be able to get down to Florida.
Gotcha. So, okay. That's what it would allow you to do. Fly yourself to Florida.
Yeah.
And that'd probably be would that be like a 3 hour trip, 4 hour trip?
Four and a half. Yeah. Okay. So a little bit longer, but you got the freedom to just pick up and go.
For sure. Yeah. That's sweet. I have zero desire to become a pilot.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, there's just so much that goes into it as far as like planning weather, you know, you want to, so you want to get down to, you know, enjoy your vacation, which is great. You can enjoy your vacation, but you can relax a couple of days, but a couple of days before you got to fly out again, you got to start watching the weather and really start planning all of that out.
So you can fly. So in a 206, if you can go to Denver on the other plane you had, right? Or 206 would get you to Denver.
182 will get you out to Denver.
So the 206 would that
the same? It's just got a little. It's a little bit bigger. It's okay. Got six seats. Right. We take it. You know, I had the Tahoe, and that was the 206 of the Suburban.
Okay,
so,
gotcha. Okay,
so you can get the kids and the gear and all your wife stuff in the baggage in the 206, where we were having to, you know, hey everyone, 20 pounds max, you know, for your luggage for the week.
Yeah. So. That'd be hard with my family.
We
chartered a plane to Nantucket. And like I literally went on because I knew this was gonna be a problem.
Yeah.
Because it was my wife and our daughter and we had crew our son along, and I knew it was gonna be a problem. So I'm like, okay, how many? And it was like, I can't remember. It was like 40 cubic feet or something like that.
Yeah.
So, and they're like, well, how big is that? So I literally had to like tape it out and then show them how high it would be. And they're both like, oh, that's less room than I thought. And like, we ended up having to pile some stuff on the,
you put it in the bathroom.
We took one of the hawkers that SC Aviation has down there. Yep. So I think you've flown them before. Yep. And we had to use the bench back there and for some stuff. And I'm like, God, you guys, it's like, there's four of us. Like, and I had a bag that was this, you know, this big, that's my bag. And, but I knew that was gonna be a problem. So
amazing how they always figure it out. How to figure out, you know, you might not have a bathroom, but that's for all the luggage.
Well, like out of all the trips that I take, there's so many times I'll bring stuff and then I'm like, I didn't even need half. So like every time I travel now, it's like I get less and less stuff.
Yeah.
And then like I look at what my family brings and I'm like, dude, you're not going to use that. You're not going to wear that. You're not going to wear that.
Yeah. I got my little pilot bag. It's got the MacBook, your iPad, credit card wallet, or credit card rich wallet, and your cell phone.
Yep.
We're good. 100%. We're good to
go. So as you started to back to the business stuff a little bit, as you started to be more successful with your business, what were some things that you started to look at to do with your money outside of, obviously, you know, doing what we do, we pour a lot back into our business, but I think you've also got other investments and whatnot. What, as you started to make more money, how'd you know when it was time to look at other types of investments and take advantage of them versus when not to?
Yeah. I kind of started right from the get-go. I've always had that passion of owning real estate, and more, not really owning real estate, it's just, you know, improving things. I think that's my biggest passion. Yeah. It's just improving things, whether it's the, you know, someone's patio that's cracked up that needs to be repaired, or buying a, you know, property that needs to be fixed up, or maybe doesn't need to be fixed up, but we're going to do it anyway. Yeah. So I think 5-6 years in, whatever year it was, started with taking, you know, just kind of set our profits aside and start buying real estate. Started with a single family home.
So when you set profits aside, did you like set a budget also though, so you could buy like, you know, CapEx and your in better state maintenance, and like to be able to like buy an equipment, I consider it CapEx. I don't know what you call it or whatever, but you'd have basically your profits, but then how would you know what to set aside for new equipment that you need to replace or like new equipment period, just because you're growing and need new equipment? Like how'd you free rein it?
So I'll take it back. Like even 5 years in, I think we only had five pieces of equipment and, four or five pieces of equipment.
How many do you have now?
I just did an asset check before we left, cause we were getting ready for snow season. We have 125 assets.
That's sweet.
So yeah, anywhere from, you know, little skid 259 skid loader all the way up to a $300,000 payload.
Yeah.
So we've got everything in between. But there wasn't really any formula or anything with it. So we had five assets knowing that, yeah, I think we can get by next year doing this. And I have a different mindset kind of than I do today, but, I think we can get by next year with what we got. And we've got an extra $20,000 in the bank. Let's buy our first piece of real estate. And I think that all happened within like a drive from Janesville to Milton as we drove by a property that was for sale. And it's like,
this is you and Danielle talking, you and your wife talking?
No, this was yeah, just me. Just,
oh, okay. Gotcha.
So Danielle, she always jokes on like, well, what am I signing now?
So, my wife does too.
Yeah. So, no, it was, I think I after the first purchase, it was, hey, we bought a single family, you know, house. It's only $50,000 though. So we're going to do all right. Fixed it up, put $10,000-$15,000 into it, sold it for $100,000. And it's like, that was the first project, right on John Paul Road in Milton. Yeah. That was my first project, and like, it was just off to the races there. Like my whole passion changed from, you know, the landscaping to, well, this is really cool in real estate.
Yeah, for sure. You also had a creative deal somewhere in there, right? Like not too long after that deal. Didn't you have like some farm and you sectioned off the land?
Yeah. Yeah.
How'd that come about, and tell people how you structured that deal? And so I remember you telling me about it.
Yeah. So I think, so we'll figure out how to start. That was a $400,000 purchase.
And that came, was that the next one after this flip you just said?
Yep. So if we take, I think at the end of the day, we had the first $20,000 that I started with to buy that first property. Purchase date. So we sold that 1031 there. Sold that. I don't even think I knew what 1031 was at that time.
Yeah.
It's like I sold it, saw a farm, talked to the guy, worked the deal out on a 60-acre farm north of Milton. And own that for a short period of time, sectioned off the farm ground from the woods and the house even. And really that was my first like.
So you sectioned off into three different pieces.
Yeah, 60 acres. So it was like 40 acres of field we sectioned off, sold that to a farmer. And that was right when land prices were around us. We were going from $4,000 to $8,000 an acre. So I bought it at four, sold that for eight. Then I took the 15 acres of woods and sold that to someone that really wanted to build a house. So kind of got premium money on that woods where the farmer didn't value that woods because it wasn't anything for him. Then went to the house up front in 3 acres, fixed that up and sold that to one of my employees at the time. So went, introduced him to the bank, sold that. So I did all three of those deals within a 7 month period, and then rolled into the farm center in town, the old feed mill, which is now our headquarters and our gateway prop. That's where Gateway Property came about.
So you only owned that, the one that you sectioned off, how long did you own that one for?
Less than a year.
So it was like 400. You turned it into, you double on it? Close? More?
Yeah, I think we almost doubled.
Yeah.
Doubled our.
So it's an arbitrage. It was an arbitrage game, right? I mean, you're able to. And that's exactly what we do too. There's so much. If you understand something, if you're really, it doesn't matter if it's like, it could be comic books, right? You go to a garage sale and people that understand comic books, they might be able to pick up these comic books for. I mean, if I buy some single family home or whatever, and I'm going to go flip it, and if someone left some comic books in the attic and I didn't know anything about comic books, I'd be the person. I'd be like, okay, yep, for a quarter at a garage sale, sell them. And someone else would come along and be like, because I just don't know comic books.
Yeah.
Someone else would be like, oh, I'm going to buy these. I'm going to flip them for $10 up to probably $1,000 per comic, whatever. So when you understand the real estate game, it's crazy when you can kind of piece things together like that, and you can take the sum of everything, get it for X, right? Because maybe the other person just doesn't want to deal with dividing it up. Maybe they don't know, you know, whatever. But you know the actual value that you have there. That's like the one deal you're invested in with us, fund three, where we bought the the 154 apartment buildings. We bought, there was also 32 duplexes there. Like, nobody realized what that was until I actually saw that deal 3 or 4 times. I just like would pass on it just like other people. But then I'm like, one day I was kind of bored. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna actually break all this down and see what all this was worth if they just started retailing duplexes off individually and just, you know, made the apartments operate better and then sold them in individually or together to another buyer. And that's why I'm like, wait, I could buy these for $33 million. It's worth $39 million right now if I broke it all up.
Yeah.
So that's the arbitrage game. And so I think you're pretty good at that game too, obviously doing what you do.
Just look at it from every angle. Like, you look at it from, the guy wanted, $4,000 an acre times that. And it's like, just look at it, step back, look at it from a different angle. Okay. Yeah. I got a survey fee and I've got to do some work rehabbing this house, but like the market value on that house worth $400,000. And
that's covering
the way
this
breaks down, I'm going to get this house for $100,000.
Yep.
So just look at it from that other angle.
100%. Yeah. And because there's a lot of people like, I've picked up deals that have, it's an arbitrage play. And literally, like, the guy that sold the for Fund 3, the deal I just talked about, the guy that sold that, he knew what it was worth because he actually had it priced higher than the 33 we bought. I think he had it priced initially for like 36 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so, I think he knew what was there, but he was older and he didn't want to take the time to go through and sell off each duplex because we're doing it right now and it's taken a while to sell off each duplex individually. And it's kind of a headache because you're dealing with a different type of buyer and, there's a piece of chip paint and they're complaining about it and they're buying a duplex, right? It's just a different buyer. But I mean, there's huge value there. So, I think that arbitrage is just a big game that, and again, it doesn't matter if it's if you're just looking to get started into something and finding a way to get money, find whatever you know about and understand, there's a way to recognize a great deal of profit or opportunity through arbitrage in that.
Yeah, definitely. It's just finding, peeling off that house and just sectioning that out. It's like, okay, now that cost breaks down to $2,500 an acre.
And it's like, it's just finding out who's each piece most valuable to, right? I mean, as one big thing, like the guy limited how many people wanted to buy it.
The farmer didn't want the woods.
Right. He didn't want the woods. He probably maybe didn't want the house. Maybe some of the farmers did. Maybe some of the farmers didn't, whatever, but you limit versus if you can just be like, all right, I'll be the buyer for the whole thing. And now I'm going to find the best user for each portion of this, and that's exactly what we're doing too on the deal that we're kind of breaking apart and just selling every duplex individually. We picked up the duplexes on average for like $315,000 a duplex, and now we're selling them for our lowest two have gone for like $511,525. Everything else has been above 680, and we're averaging I think around like 700 because we're hitting some that are in the 750, 780, 790. So, but it's an arbitrage play, and those opportunities are out there for sure.
Yeah. So let me finish out that story.
Yeah, I blew your whole thing up there.
No, that's all good. That $20,000 to start on that single family, rolled it into the farm, then rolled it into what I still own and operate now, actually with my father, is Gateway Properties. So we've got 36 tenants there. We rolled that
into 36. That's more than I would have guessed.
Yeah, we rolled that into the 5 acres parcel right in Milton. With literally no cash down and I built my office there and we started building out contractor suites and some large RV based storage and stuff. But rolled that into, it's got an evaluation, right. Encroaching on $7 million
for
right
sure.
now. So from $20,000 to $7 million.
Yep. And that's the power of getting started right now too.
Yep.
Right. I mean,
for sure.
the power of not procrastinating, the power of getting started. People, the thing that I've always seen too, through 12 years of doing this is like, there's times that, I'm telling people like I'm always buying because I feel like I'm never gonna be able to perfectly time the marketplace. So I'm always taking action. I'm always trying to buy because I know if I were to try to project it or project when the best time to buy is, if I actually miss it and mistime it, that doesn't do me any good. But if I consistently buy and have a long enough hold period or the ability to hold long enough, I feel like I'm always gonna win. And I think that there's a lot of people, as I was going through and buying real estate, they're like, well, everything costs so much right now. Like, there's always some excuse a lot of people have.
Yeah.
It's either like, it costs too much right now, or rates are too high, or, whatever the excuse is, there's always a counter to that that's a good thing. So, like, for example, if rates are too high. Like right now, that's the excuse. Well, rates are just too high. I can't buy anything. I'm like, why? Right now, if I can make a deal work, I'm like, great. Because when rates come down, it's going to be a really good deal.
Yeah, and
you're
just dating that rate.
I'm going to refine it, right? Exactly. So I'm like, is it a little harder to find deals in certain economic cycles? Yeah, I think so. But like, there's always deals out there and there's always a reason not to buy. But that's, you know, not getting in the game, you know, and our stories are, you know, a testament to this. Not getting into the game is the ultimate, is the biggest cost.
Yeah. Think about it. You know, when rates were 6%, 10, 12 years ago, if you didn't get, I mean, but that property value is double,
100%. Because if you would have bought, because I remember, yeah, I mean, 2015, whatever, when we were, yeah, it was 6%. But then again, if you held that property until it came down to what it was in 2021, yeah, and it's at 3%, now you're locked in at 3% for 5 or 7 or 10 years, yeah, you did really, really well, right? And then that was the thing too, is like, you know, prices, when rates were really low, prices were higher. But it's still like, if you got in on the front end of that, you still benefit from a lot of this appreciation that's going on. And I really think in like the rental markets, at least apartments, multifamily, because there's been so many less starts lately. I mean, a lot of things are finishing up from, you know, record high starts from, you know, a couple of years back. But over the last year, like starts have been a lot lower, like cut in half. So I'm looking at like 2026, I'm like 2026, 2027, I think there's going to be huge inflation again when it comes to what people are having to pay for these apartments and everything. So that's why I'm like, I don't care that rates are high. Like, we just closed on a 48 unit this morning, actually.
Yeah. Congrats.
Yeah, there. Thanks. And so we got like another, you know, 64 unit in the pipeline. We got a couple other things, another 205 units in the pipeline. So like, I'm always trying to find these value add deals that have hopefully some arbitrage. And I don't care, again, if rates are high, if rates are low, if, you know, if the market's up, if the market's down, I always want to be trying to buy deals that I think are good deals and I can hold on to for the long term. And I think that you always win that way.
Yeah, definitely. Especially if there's an opportunity to value add there, or, you know, like you said, you know, put up another building or maximize what someone else isn't.
100%. So with your gateway properties, did you 1031 into that, or
yes,
you 1031 into it? I didn't realize you can 1031 into construction, huh?
Yeah,
new construction.
1031, and then we had the owner of the farm center there, the feed mill, that 5 acres. He owner financed on a separate, took the second seat to the bank. Owner financed that, and so we were able to get that thing off the ground.
Gotcha.
with no money down.
And then, so now you're building the car wash. How'd you stumble on that?
Yeah, so that's just kind of one of those projects that's kind of a pain point in my business. I'm super anal about, you know, clean trucks, organized trucks, you know,
hey, shop being clean.
Yeah. If we're going to take care of our high touch clients and make sure that there's no issues on their construction sites, we can't show up with a dirty trailer, dirty truck. So, we have a pressure washer at our shop. It's actually a nice mounted pressure washer on the back of the building that after every single snowstorm, we come in and all our trucks wash outside. But it's a safety concern. We had some safety issues there.
Slip and fall safety?
Yeah. Some, you know, when it's 0 degrees out and you get done salting, the expectation is you still come back with a clean truck. You still do your post-storm debrief. So that was the deal this year. I recruited my brother to come in, my older brother, Nick, to come in and give me a hand with getting this car wash off the ground. So we've got a car wash under construction right now that'll accommodate large RVs, large trucks, and be able to obviously keep our trucks clean and keep our guys safe in the winter.
And obviously be able to wash like smaller compact cars too?
Yeah, we'll be an auto wash there and be a we'll have the whole works, pet wash, the whole works.
How many bays?
Three bays. One of them is big enough. You can pull a semi in. The other one's, you know, going to be geared towards that midsize RV. And then you've got your, you know, just standard car.
When you say semi, truck and trailer?
It'll be tight. But yeah, definitely the semi truck, the quad axle dump truck.
Yep.
That's, you know, we're going to cater to that business.
And those are all touch free. Or is that soft touch on those things?
That's all. So our automatic's going to be touchless or soft touch. So it's a combination system. It's one of the newer systems out there that you can pick either or, and then self service on.
I'm a soft touch guy. I roll through the quick trips, and I'm a soft touch. Soft touch.
Exactly.
Quick trips not fitting a RV through though.
Yeah. No way. So
that's pretty sweet. Yeah. So you have a soft touch on a big
So that's for only the auto wash. The smaller cars. So
okay, gotcha.
The large one is self service, dual guns,
got
wands,
it.
The whole works.
Okay. In my mind, I'm like, holy shit.
No, they like to do the get their hands dirty. Makes sense. Those trucks clean,
so. Yeah. So with your 36 tenants, I know you said at the Gateway Properties, are most of those, is it pretty much, what percentage of that is the contractor type shops versus someone just storing like an RV?
Yeah, so I think we've got 25 of those are smaller businesses. So 25 different small businesses, anywhere from our the window tint guy, the auto detailing guy. So Blackout Windows is a good tenant of ours, and Apex Auto Detailing. Those are two really good tenants of ours. To the taxidermist, to the plumber, the builder, a lot of our subcontractors that we use on a daily basis too. To Grace Hospice, they're one of our anchor tenants there. So yeah, there's just a huge mix of businesses from zero to eight employees there on site. So got a really good dynamic.
What's the average size of the contractor shop?
Either 1,250 square feet with an office and bathroom, or 2,500 square foot. So they either have half the, like a duplex, or they'll have the whole building.
Oh, gotcha. There. Okay. So if they have the 2,500 square foot, they have two offices, two bathrooms, or?
Nope. Still only one and one, but they just have that bigger shop space.
Gotcha. Okay. There. So then you have 36 spaces of those, or?
Yeah. Yep. And then the rest is going to be the whatever, 9, 10, 11 RV. I
think just regular cold storage type.
Yep. The guys that RV have their $100,000 boats that they pull in there.
Was that all built in one phase?
We did it in two, but it was phase one was full when we were still under construction. So we rolled right into phase two.
How'd you pre-lease all that?
They just came. So in connections, you know, a lot of some of the contractors that we use in our business are subcontractors for our plumbing, you know, at our plumbing and gas lines and plumbing and outdoor kitchens, you know, our guys that were looking for some space and now found a home here at Gateway.
Gotcha. What's the benefit? What do you like better about investing in real estate versus being a shareholder or owner of your business?
The real estate end of things, I feel like it's getting set up for, like, that's the exit strategy. That's one of the exit strategies. So aside from the Gateway and the car wash, we've got another 40,000 square foot of industrial warehousing, a couple office buildings, stuff like that. That it's really just, you know, that's the right before it was, hey, we're going to invest, spending all our money on these, you know, properties, to now it's like finally starting to pay us back every single month.
Yep.
To pay for a lifestyle, really.
100%. So that's more of your fun money maybe, or what?
Yeah, it's all of them.
What's next for Badger Storage? Badger Storage. That's my old company. Whoa, going back. I had some storage units. What's next for Badger State Maintenance?
Okay, what's next for Badger State Maintenance is kind of taking a 180 at Badger State Maintenance. We've always been that. I shouldn't say always, but the last 5 years we've been that. COVID kind of shot us up from that $2 million to $3 million company, $3.5 million company, just because everyone was home and wanted to spend money.
That's revenue you're talking about?
Yep. Yep, everyone wants to spend money and stay at home and get their yards fixed up and whatnot. We've kind of stalled out there the last 5 years. So recently this year, you know, kind of the mission and the game plan is to double down back into Badger State and really get that set up to take off and set up for growth. So we're going to close in on, you know, $5.5 million in revenue at the end of this year. And
that'll be a record then at that point.
That'll be a record, and with a goal to get to 10 in the next 3 years. Nice. So
what do you kind of, and again, if there's certain things you don't want to share, obviously you don't have to, cause if it's, you know, proprietary or secret or whatever, that's fine. What are some of the things that you're planning to do to go from the 5 to 10? Is it, you know, what are some of the things that you're planning on doing?
Investing in people, processes, and procedures. Those are the three things that I have not done in the last 16 years, and I'll be the first one to admit it. It's been me. It's been Nate's way or the highway.
Yeah, like, for sure.
So we burn through people too.
I was there. Yeah. I've been there.
Yeah. So it was a struggle. Like if there's no process on how to do this, how do you expect someone else to do it? And just not having the mindset of, well, let's build that process out. We've doubled down on people, had some really key hires the last 18 months, last 15 months. One recently coming in, was a sales guy, and really more than a sales guy. Joe was able to manage production sales, which is he comes from that background too. Bringing on a full-time designer, full-time estimator, to be able to, you know, step back and work on the business and get those processes written, get those, you know, those procedures, so the crews know what they're doing in the morning.
For sure.
So joined a peer group in the last, over the last year. And that's been a huge game changer as well.
Sweet. Yeah. What do you think was the hardest thing? Cause again, I've been through everything you just said there. What's been hardest as you've added new people, or as your business grew and as you added new people and as you thought about adding new people, what was hardest for you to actually hire them? Was it letting something go, or was it what was the toughest thing there?
I think it's just the upfront investment. Like, if you want to hire good people, you have to pay them well.
Yeah.
It's just flat out. You can maybe get someone on a discount, but that's only going to be short-lived because the next person's going to come and pay them what they deserve, what they justfully deserve,
for sure.
Rightfully deserve. So really just going out on a limb and being like, you know what, we've invested in, you know, we can put down $400,000 or $500,000 on a buying a property. Why can't we spend, you know, $200,000 on a or 150 or 100,000 right. on a key hire,
yeah.
You know, let's do it. Let's roll the dice.
Yep.
And really just letting go. That's been the biggest thing, is just to let go and bring them on and let them run. And it's been a game changer.
So yeah, that was tough for me too. Cause when I, you know, brought on our COO, who's now our CEO of Spalding Group, the management company, it was the same thing for me. Like, I'm like, oh man, this is what it's going to take. So I had to, like, all my entire salary and basically the profits of the company at that point in time, like, were gone from the property management end. That company were essentially gone to make that hire. But for me, I knew I kind of came to this period where I'm like, I realized I needed it, because at that point I was overseeing everybody in the property management company. So all the techs, all that, and I was, that's not what I'm best at.
What you're good at.
Not what I'm good at. I'm best at finding the deal, putting the deals together. And I was still trying to find the deals, putting the deals together. So at the point in time, we had like 400 units or so. Actually, I think we had 300. And then the day after our COO joined us back in 2019, we ended up closing on 96 units the day after she joined us. So that either took us to 400 or 500 units. But again, at that point in time, when I was hiring some of those people, you know, or when I was hiring her, they're like, there was other people in the industry like, you only have 400 or 500 units. How are you doing this? And why are you doing this? I'm like, well, how? I'm investing in the property, so I'm just going to live on that cash flow, not take any salary from, you know, the operating company, the management company. I'm gonna have to eat dirt and figure it out. Yeah. But I wasn't able to go out and look at enough deals to continue to grow. So we add her, and in a period of, you know, 3 years, we go on and, you know, get another 1500 units, and there's no way it happens if it's not bringing her on board.
Yeah. You're going to front load it and know that you're going to, you know, struggle a little bit, and let alone, like, you make more than I, or you make, like, I literally gave you all my salary. I don't have anything. I'm like, but I trust you and I'm investing in you. So roll, let's go.
Yep. And so I think I've kind of been able to get over the, I probably had an easier time to actually let go of some of that stuff, because it's not actually what I like to do either.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And I love, like, building things. So, like, when I'm in, but I know my designs take me 8 hours to put together.
Yeah.
But I got a guy that can crank them out in 2.5.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, so now we can put together quadruple.
So I think that's probably part of the reason why I could hire, like, let some of that stuff go. Cause when she came on, it was basically everything that I gave her was stuff that I mean, wasn't as good at. She's clearly better at it than I am. And I just didn't have a passion for it either. So I think that's probably why it was easier for me cause now I'm looking at some of the things right now that I'm like, okay, at some point I'm probably gonna have to let some of this stuff go. And I'm not, as far as like the acquisition parts of the acquisition and, you know, putting the deals together. And so, like, even when I contemplate that, I'm like, who's the next hire? Cause like Spalding Capital side, there's really not any other employees. It's basically just me.
Yep.
Right. And then we got Ava, who's, you know, an independent contractor, not even a Spalding Group employee. And so I'm like, well, what's the next? And I, the first things that I kind of jot down are like the things that I don't really like to do of the whole process. Yep. So I think the things that we like to do are the things that, but I'm also, I think I'm best at the ones that I don't want to give up either, which is, you know, find the deals and whatnot. But I know that can be hard for a lot of people, but I mean, it's a big sacrifice.
Yeah.
I know for me.
That's for sure.
And I think my company, we still lack in the processes, you know, so like I'm kind of jumping back into a little bit of the processes game of, you know, like our VP of facilities, and working with him on, like, you know, make sure we need to do a better job of standardizing all of our stuff yet. Like the products we use, and just like we're at that size, like we need to do it because we're going to see a huge cost savings on, and just like efficiency savings and all that stuff. So I'm kind of jumping back into some of that to like what you mentioned, the processes, procedures. So cool, man. Yeah. Joel, do you have anything you'd like to add or ask Nate?
Yeah. One thing that I was curious about is scale. Obviously when you start, you're going green and you know, because you mow lawns, you know.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. But you're exactly.
But you know, I mean, you're starting from, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to start.
Yeah.
What was that growth curve and that learning curve going from being the key operator to scaling to a point where you're focused on hiring the experts instead of being the expert?
Yeah.
If that makes sense. What are some of those things that you've learned now going from where you are right now and where you want to go, that you can kind of exponentially increase your growth cycle just based on, okay, I learned these lessons over here. I'm going to make sure I'm implementing this from a scale standpoint.
That's a tough one. I don't think it's come like natural, because it's been 16 years in the making. So it hasn't been a, hey, this is where we are after 3-4 years. It's been, you know, just a slow roll the last 15 years of, let's bring on one more person next year. Let's try two people this year. And really kind of to the point now where we ran for 3 years with 25 people or 23 people for 5 years. And we're just kind of stalled out, and like, I'm just hungry to grow now and really like be able to bring in those experts. I feel like we've collected. So those 5 years of stagnant, that we've been able to, you know, put our cash reserves away. We've been able to like just sit on the sidelines. And my thought behind this was, well, something catastrophic is going to happen. Let's just sit on the sidelines and wait till the right time to double down. And here we are. And who knows if this is the right time or not, but we're doing it. So I don't know if I answered your question on that, but it's been just a slow roll the last 15 years. And we're ready to run that, just, you know, going balls to the wall here in the next 12 months.
I know I said we weren't going to bring up politics, but the presidential elections have always been good to me. We've been able to like we bought a ton of stuff before Trump came in. It benefited. I mean, there was go back to the same $33 million deal we bought. That guy was adamant that the deal closed before Joe Biden was in office. So we closed two nights before he was inaugurated.
Because the world was going to end.
Yeah, yeah. He was just like, he thought the world was going to end and whatever. Yeah. And I'm like, well, I'll take advantage. Like, let's go. I'll close it before Joe comes in. And you know, look at, and then inflation, just, they print all this money and inflation takes off. And it was a great, great choice. So hopefully this presidential election too, either way,
it's been
no
up
matter
and
which
down.
Way it bounces.
Yeah, it's been up and down. And I've really seen this. I mean, the bigger we get and the more we do grow, like you see just, hey, you know, something came out in the news last week and this project, just, you know, this project's on hold. And then the week later, it's like, actually, we're doing an addition on the project we just put on hold. And so just kind of just floating with, you know, what the, as the tide rolls of just rolling with it.
100%.
It's been fun too.
You think Badger State maintenance? So do you think part of your, obviously you talked about the people processes. Will you guys just keep doubling down on the services that you do now? Or do you think, are there more services that you guys can offer and more things that you can do? Or are you kind of already doing all the, are you kind of already offering each customer everything already? Or?
Yeah. So I think one thing that our customers are really starving for is that, that personal touch. So I think we are doing, like, our maintenance division, we're planning on tripling our maintenance division by next spring. So we have three really good operators on our maintenance division that it's, you know, we're going to turn those into three different crews next spring.
Yeah.
So it's not like just starting fresh and starting into a new, you know, starting into a new division. It's all stuff that we're doing now it's just not making sense. We're only running, you know, 1.5 maintenance crews. Mm-hmm. Why are we only running 1.5 maintenance crews? We're coming up to Madison, you know, for one day of work a week.
Right.
Let's just get the fall week figured out.
Yeah, for sure.
And then build that branch out in Madison.
Yeah.
So, opportunity. Yeah. So that's where we're at, is just we're running three install crews. Like, we have the demand. We have the people for 5. We have the demand for 6. So why don't we add 2 more maintenance crews?
Yes. Yeah. And then how much of your stuff is actually subcontracted out? Do you sub much out, or
little bit? We sub out a little bit. Our irrigation side of things, we do sub out, but we've got 2 really good irrigation partners that we work with on a weekly basis, and they live, breathe, eat irrigation.
That's what they
do. Yeah. So we work with them, but we build them into our service contracts too. So basically just all inclusive.
Makes sense. I just didn't know if there was, because I know with like everything that you do, I'm like, there's probably not much more you can really add to your.
Yeah. A couple carpenters here and there, you know, we're building out a pool house or whatnot. We'll bring on a subcontractor or a carpenter to get that aspect of the project built out. The subs for bringing in the, you know, dropping in the pool or whatnot, we'll work on.
Do you design like the outdoor kitchens and like a pool house? Design that type of stuff too?
We do all the design work. We do all the permitting. And then we'll just bring in small aspects of, you know, to frame that out.
So you guys will do decks if that's part of like a bigger project or something. You're not just going to go do a one-off deck probably, unless, you know, it's a huge project or something. But if it's a part of like a hardscape and a pool and landscaping, and the deck is also, sometimes then you'll throw a deck in.
Yeah, we'll take care of the deck.
Yeah.
Get that built. So
it's really about getting more crews out there, more people to grow, more than anything is what it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. It's just perfecting what we do now and scaling what we do.
Sell more cheeseburgers.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're McDonald's, you're trying to sell more cheeseburgers, not make more stuff.
All right. Yep.
Joel, what else you got? Anything else for Nate?
Curious, from a business structure standpoint, do you run primarily project to project, or do you kind of go on a retainer base with certain customers with like a monthly fee? They pay a certain amount. You cover these kinds of scopes of work.
Yeah, so our commercial maintenance side of the business is, here's your flat rate for the year. So we know that on average it's going to snow 12 times this year. We know on average we're going to salt your property 21 times this year. 25 times we'll mow it. So there's kind of our base. You know, we are going to take care of the weeds and the landscape beds. You know, we have a standard on that. And then it's really it's the enhancements behind it. And everyone loves the enhancements, you know, of, hey, let's get, you know, refreshing that mulch bed, or let's redo this planting bed. That patio's cracked. Let's get that, you know, replaced for you. So it's all our maintenance side of things is flat rate, standard, monthly fee majority of the time. And then the enhancements that come behind it.
Does one part of the business feed the other part of the business?
Our commercial bid build, which commercial bid build, an example would be Rock County Jail in Janesville. They're building, that's a commercial project. They just rebuilt the jail. So we're the landscape contractor on that project. Our the bid build division, so has a handoff then at the end of the job to the maintenance guys. So then the maintenance guys roll in and we take over that. All right, now we're going to take care of your snow, and we're going to take care of all these other services.
So you think it happens more like that versus the other way, or which way do you think it happens more?
Yeah, both. So we're talking back and forth.
Right. So someone might be looking for someone to take care of just their straight up grass right now.
Yep.
Right. And then they realize, oh, you do the hardscapes too. Now do the hardscape. So you think it's pretty even between that conversion?
I think so. One of our processes at the end of the installation, we have a handoff with our maintenance team. Mm-hmm. So we'd put in that mulch bed, we put in all of those new plantings, new grass, but really you're not done. There is a dial in that needs to come. There needs to be a handoff, because our maintenance and our enhancement team has to come behind them after the grass is starting to grow to really redefine those beds, get everything like dialed in. So that's the handoff right there that then we can usually take it to the next level with that customer of, you know, giving them that 12-month experience.
So that first initial handoff, is that usually in the initial contract and scope?
No.
So that's added on. So, okay, that's all outside. Okay.
All outside of scope there. Gotcha.
So it's almost an add-on. And then you also hope, obviously, then you can take care of it year-round and keep a touch point with them. So when the next contract comes, obviously, they're going to hopefully just come right back to you.
Yeah. And being, we've seen the evolution of 15 years ago, 16 years ago, we installed land. You know, we put in that customer's landscaping. We've maintained it for 15 years. Now they're calling us back saying, hey, our taste really isn't what it was 15 100%. Years ago, and we want to redo the whole backyard.
So life changes. They might have grandkids now, or they might have kids now, or whatever, and so they're wanting to change.
Add tear a pool. That out. Let's get a pool. Let's get an outdoor kitchen in, and we've ripped out, you know, block that I laid 15 years ago. So it's pretty cool.
We might have one of the most expensive pools coming up in Stoughton. I bought the house next to me.
Ooh, all right.
If the only reason we did that was for a pool, which right now it's
I see it's an
stupid
Infinity
purchase.
Edge like, there. Nice house right in the middle, Infinity
Edge. The thing that sucks about where I live is it's the town of Pleasant Springs.
Yep.
And so since you're a town, you're not a village. So now the town rolls with Dane County ordinance.
Yeah, it's just hoops. You got to jump through.
You're limited on like lakefront, right? And stuff like that and certain things. And so my neighbors are actually going through it right now. They're building the house. Well, so the people we bought our house that we live in from, they then moved into the house right next door.
Yep. While they're building. From them.
Well, right when we bought it in 2021, that first house, they went and bought the house right next door.
Okay.
Moved in there. So they moved literally from the house we live in, moved right next door.
Yep.
They were good. They went to the Kentucky Derby. We're really good friends with them. And then they're building two doors down now. This is supposed to be done a year from now. So we just bought that neighboring house to us. We're renting back to them while their house is getting finished.
Yep.
But the whole thing is, I mean, you know, again, talking about like different phases of life where, you know, we got with kids and like I coach, I take U12 soccer way too seriously.
Yeah.
It's like I coach like it's like, you know, and the girls like my daughter wants to bring over like the friends that go tubing and all that stuff. And it's like there's a handful of days where like they're like, oh, I wish we had a pool. And I'm like, well, we need it. It's like so life changes and now we're trying. So I'm like, all right, I can't let them sell this property next door. And then like 5 years from now, like, cause sometimes lake properties, you don't know, like the next buyer of that property could hold onto it for two generations or something. And I'm like, I might as well just lock this down. And then I at least have the option to be able to do something. So it's a stupid purchase.
Yeah, that's okay. Sometimes you got to do that and you got the cash flow to do
but anyways,
something fun.
That's where, you know, you again, like people's life, you know, you do someone's landscaping 15 years ago and now they got kids, now they got grandkids, now they want a different, you know, they need a different amenity style. Or whatever, or a different style or whatever. And yeah, if you're that go-to person who, and if you weren't taking care of it the whole time, they might've forgot about you.
Yeah. Forgot. And it's a cutthroat industry. So it's definitely, high touch. So
yeah. Joel.
From, a process, a standpoint, how critical have you found it to be when it comes to both on the physical work that you do, but also maybe more from sales, essentially is what it is. Mm-hmm. But like sales and the admin side, how critical has it been to creating the processes and the duplicatable patterns, the rinse and repeat from being able to, you know, this person can implement the exact same process to this person, so that every customer is getting the exact same experience.
Yeah. And by no means are we experts. This is all a work in progress. And my wife, Danielle, she works in the office at Badger State. So she was a teacher for 7 years. I recruited her to come over work at Badger State. And she brings that teacher mentality that, you know, she was a first grade teacher. So too, of like, hey, this is what we're going to do today. This is how we're going to do it. So she's really brought those processes into the office side of things for repetitive billing, for, you know, all of the, you know, weekly service accounts and our software we use too is kind of, you know, puts it on autopilot. But out in the field, it's been, and I'll just jump to how we're working on getting through those processes is what's the pain point of the week? Oh, we had a call back on, you know, erosion blankets after this windstorm getting blown up. So like this week's process is we're going to build and train the blanket installation process. So just kind of, and people love that. Our team loves that. Like, thanks. We have a book of processes now. And they're like, they're flipping through in the morning, knowing what they have to go out and do that day. And they love, like,
yeah, I think you sent that to me on Snapchat, or I saw that on Snapchat.
Yeah, they love that structure of, okay, this is, thank you for clarifying that, because everyone has 10 different ways on how to mow grass. But
you could go up and down these hallways right now, and this is pretty soundproof, so they can't hear us. But you could go up and down these hallways right now and ask people, like, there's people here that, like, this person's doing it different than that person.
Yeah.
And it sucks. Yeah. And so that's what we're honing in on that. Like, this is the time right now to hone in on some of that stuff. It's hard.
It's freaking hard. Like, it's, you just have to literally, I mean, my day is usually Saturdays is process Saturday. Like, Saturday, it's when I've got time in the office. Nobody's knocking on your door, but, you know, interrupting you. And it's like, I'm just going to crank this stuff out. You just have to make a conscious effort to do it.
And I mean, for me, it's always, I was always like, okay, let's acquire. Cause like, for me to hire people, I needed to have all these properties.
Yeah.
Right. I needed to have all these problems, and I didn't do a good enough job. And I've done every role in our company. And when I was doing every role, I didn't do a good enough job of documenting everything that I was doing to hand it over. So when I started hiring my first people in 2015, 16, 17, whenever it was, it would just be like, all right, here you go. And I just like threw them into the fire. Yeah. I didn't give them no direction, no anything. They told me at the interview they could do this, this, and this. I'm like, all right, go for it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, our COO comes in and, you know, we go from like 16 employees and, you know, a year later, none of those people were with, I think actually one person was still with us. I would sit down, I would meet with the person one time, like, all right, let's roll. But my mindset was then is like, I don't have time for this interview. I'm going to trust you.
Yeah.
But then sometimes I would fire people like 2 days later.
Well, that's, and I'm not, that's okay.
I'm not proud of it. Know? Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah. But it also, that's why I'm not in that role.
Yeah, for sure.
whereas now I think like, I'm always like, oh, we're hiring too slow. Like we're hiring too slow. We need to hire faster, you know, whatever. But it's, you know, we've got some really, really good people here. And the cool thing now is like, we've got people that have been here for, you know, again, like our CEO been here for 6 years, you know, our director of facilities coming up. Well, he just got promoted to VP of facilities, been here for almost 2 years now. The director of accounting been here for almost 2 years. We've got property accounts been here for 2 and 3, 4 years.
Yeah.
We've got service techs now, maintenance techs that have been here for, you know, 3 and 4 and 5 years. And when I was running stuff, it was like a max of like 4 months.
Yeah. I'll be the first to admit that, like, hey, you didn't, you know, you interviewed really well, but you weren't doing half the stuff that we talked about in the interview. Like,
right.
And
a lot of it, like, I think it's on both sides, at least on my end, it's on both sides. Cause I didn't set people up for success. And like now when I talk to like our VP of facilities, who what I'm trying to get him and I'm trying to like get his expertise packaged. So I'm like, Steve, like what we're trying to do here is like, we need, like, as we continue to grow, you're not going to be able to be everywhere at once, but we need to be able to get your institutional knowledge and your knowledge and expertise on what you're doing and all that stuff. We need to be able to package that up so that everybody has access to it and that everybody can go out and duplicate what we're doing everywhere. Like one property, like our standard should be that this property should look exactly how this property looks inside, outside, like the light fixture that we're using, whatever. And we're just not there yet because we don't have all the standard processes and procedures either. I mean, we're a lot farther ahead. And I think, you know, I'm also someone that's a really hard critic of myself. So I think we're probably farther ahead too than what I make it seem just talking about this. Yeah. Cause I'm always looking at what we can do better. I'm never looking at what we're already doing.
The wins.
Really good. We could do 100 things really well. And I'll look at the 101st thing that we absolutely suck at. I'm like, well, why don't we do better right there? But yeah, it like Nate said, and like we were just talking about, it's that's the hardest thing is those executional type things and duplicating out your business and taking the time and like, cause like Nate just said it too, like, you know, I'm somewhat like Nate, where he just said like Saturdays is a process day. It's the same thing for me. It's not really necessarily straight up Saturday, but it's like when I have time, when no one can interrupt me. And that's also part of our problem because we haven't put the processes to be the number, like it really should have been the number one. And that's what I'm starting to see over the last 2 years is like, as we start to implement some of these things that we are implementing, I'm like, it has to become number one. And, you know, with where we're going right now and trying to really change the property management game and all that stuff, it has to be a priority. And it sounds like it's becoming more and more of a priority, obviously.
Yeah, it's totally a work in progress, but you know, it's, you got to start somewhere and you got to, got to be committed to
it. It's never going to be perfect. I mean, you know, I like how you said too, we're not perfect. Like you go look at our Google rating right now, it's like 3.5 or 3.3 or whatever, which is probably better than most, you know, property management
companies. Yeah, that's a tough business to rate your Google rating on.
For sure. But still, customer service. Like I didn't, and for me in the real estate game, when I was first starting trying to keep my head above water, I transparently, I didn't care what my tenant thought of me. I'm like, I'm raising your rent because it's three, like you move anywhere else, it's 300. I don't care what you think. Yeah. And now it's like, I still am a businessman where I'm like, the rents are going up, but it's like, how can we do better on the service side? How can we like one of our focuses right now is, and we're actually doing it at a handful of our portfolios, is get 90% plus of our work orders done from when our tenants put them in 24 hours or less.
Yeah.
So like, that's the type of things that I'm talking about. Like you're going to pay more in rent here, but also how can we also make your experience the best? I wasn't thinking that way 10 years ago. I was like, how can we grow these properties to get more money to be able to buy more properties? And now I think part of it is, again, like a change in, you know, where I'm at in life and whatnot, you know, and it, like you think about, we got like 4,000 people living with us. It's like the town we grew up in.
Yeah.
Right. And so like, when I start to think about, it's like we need to be as good as we can in that. And then like, it's in community that I live, it's in, you know, and
yeah,
so it's, you become you more grow. Aware of that. You yeah. You grow. I've grown a lot and things have changed, and it's not, I'm not like making excuses for how I was. I mean, it's just the truth. I'm just sharing the truth. And so
it's hard too. When you're trying to stay above water and pay these yeah. bills and these massive bills. And,
yeah.
and then you get, you know, a complaint or something that you personally have to deal with.
Oh, for sure.
So
yeah, for sure. Joel, anything else? Otherwise, I mean, I think it's good. I'm glad you could make it up here.
Yeah.
First podcast appearance. Hey, we'll probably get you back on maybe like a year from now or a year and a half from now or whatever.
Perfect.
And see how like the progress has gone and whatnot and share. And but yeah, man, Nate, thanks for coming online. If you're in the Southern Wisconsin area, really, if the project's big enough, anywhere in the Midwest, right?
Yeah.
Check out Badger State.
Southern Wisconsin is there.
Southern Wisconsin.
Nice project in Janesville. Works really good.
There
too,
we go. So. Janesville, Wisconsin, Milton, Wisconsin, Madison, you know, yeah. any of those areas. But no, I really want to have Nate on because no matter where you're at in the country, you can learn from his story. He's done a great job. You know, he caught a lot of crap when he was first starting to mow those lawns and whatnot. And, you know, obviously went through a lot of tough times building this business, but has persevered, and excited to see what you're going to do in the future. Nate, thanks for joining us, man.
Sweet. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Cool.
That was good, dude.
Yeah.
Natural. Yeah. Natural. What'd you think?